Good afternoon, and welcome to Quisitive's fourth quarter and full year 2020 earnings conference call. Joining us for today's call are Quisitive Chief Executive Officer Mike Reinhart and Chief Financial Officer Michael Murray. Following their remarks, we will open the call for your questions. Before we begin today, I'd like to remind everyone that during the conference call, management will be making statements that contain forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable Canadian securities legislation. Please refer to the company's forward-looking information disclaimer statement, which can be found on the notice for this call, our website, and the Q4 and full year earnings release. I will now turn the call over to Mike Reinhart. Sir, please proceed.
Thank you, Shauna, and good afternoon, everyone. We appreciate you taking the time to join our Q4 and full year 2020 earnings call. During this past year and in the recent months, Quisitive has made significant progress across all facets of our business. From consistently executing on our cloud solutions business, achieving key milestones bringing us closer to LedgerPay general availability, and conducting vital acquisitions to further propel both core business segments, the past few months have set us up for transformational growth. We had a solid 2020 and even surpassed our internal forecast for the fourth quarter. As mentioned on the previous call, we expected a traditional slower end of the year due to the holidays and vacations that are historically taken. But thanks to the consistent hard work of our team, we beat our expectations. The company achieved 169% year-over-year revenue growth, including nearly 18% organic growth in our cloud solutions business. Fast forward to the start of the new year, and we have had a few very active months. We announced an executed letter of intent with a bank sponsor to enable our payment processing capabilities for LedgerPay, announced a series of encouraging accolades, accomplished certain additional prerequisite milestones for LedgerPay, and importantly, executed two financings to equip us with the capital necessary for the transformational acquisitions that will elevate Quisitive in its next chapter. However, as I'm sure you can guess, all of this activity did not happen overnight, nor within a span of a few months. Instead, thanks again to the countless hours of preparation, diligence, and execution from our team working behind the scenes the past couple of years, we've been able to garner significant progress. Though we are extremely proud of the recent accomplishments and the trajectory we are headed in, our team recognizes that there is still much work to be done in order to capitalize on all fronts of our business. Nevertheless, with the number of items in the pipeline, we remain optimistic about our value proposition and look forward to expanding our footprint within both cloud services and payment solutions. Before I provide additional detail on our operational progress and execution of strategy within each core segment of the business, I would like to first turn the call over to CFO Michael Murphy to discuss our financial results for the fourth quarter and full year. Michael?
Thanks, Mike. And thank you to all of you who are joining us for today's call. Now to our financial results for the fourth quarter and year ended December 31, 2020. Revenue for the fourth quarter increased 142% to $13.1 million compared to $5.4 million in Q4 of last year. The increase in quarter-over-quarter revenue was due to the addition of Menlo revenues and LedgerPay license revenues, as well as organic growth within the cloud services business. Revenue for the full year increased 169% to $49.8 million compared to $18.5 million in 2019. The increase in annual revenues was due to the addition of CRG revenues for the full year of fiscal 2020, Menlo revenues, and the addition of LedgerPay licensing revenues, as well as organic growth within the cloud services customer base achieved through adding additional consulting services based on knowledge of clients' business and through cross-selling opportunities. Gross profit for the fourth quarter increased to $5.4 million, or 41% of revenue, compared to $2.3 million, or 43% of revenue, in Q4 of last year. And gross profit for the full year increased to $20.2 million, or 41% of revenue, compared with 7.9 or 43% of revenue in 2019. The increase in gross profit for both the fourth quarter and full year 2020 were in line with the increases in revenue. Sales and marketing expenses for the fourth quarter were $942,000, which was consistent with the $946,000 incurred in Q4 of last year. Sales and marketing expenses for the full year increased to $4.2 million compared to $3.3 million in 2019 the increase in sales and marketing expenses year over year was primarily due to an increased investment in expanding our outreach on emerging technology projects, specifically LedgerPay, and cross-selling an expanded suite of services. G&A for the fourth quarter increased to $2.2 million compared to $986,000 in Q4 of last year. G&A expenses for the full year increased to $7.6 million compared to $3.2 million in 2019. The increase for both the quarter and full year were primarily due to the addition of the Menlo and CRG's employees and additional administrative resources being added to manage the increased headcount, office expenses, as well as higher legal and professional fees associated with the growth of our company. Interest expense for the fourth quarter decreased to $442,000 compared to $654,000 in the same quarter of last year. The decrease in interest expense was primarily due to the balance sheet restructuring that we undertook in August, resulting in refinancing $16.1 million in high interest debt and repayment of other debt instruments through a combination of cash and share issuance during the third quarter. Interest expense for the full year increased to $3.5 million compared to $1.6 million in 2019, the interest being due to increased leverage relating to the acquisition financing for Menlo. Earnout settlement losses of $1.2 million were charged to the income statement during the year, reflecting the change in management's estimated contingent consideration liability related to earnout metrics being met by Menlo and CRG during the year. This means our acquisitions are paying off and is the main reason why we structure earnout as a meaningful component of deal consideration. Acquisition and transaction costs for the fourth quarter were $348,000 in 2020 compared to $1.5 million in 2019. This is due to the fact that nearly all of the Menlo acquisition costs and workstream landed in Q4 of 2019, and we were ramping up to our 2021 acquisition pipeline in Q4 2020. For the full year, costs were down to $1.3 million from $2.1 million in 2019. Net income for the fourth quarter totaled $2 million, or a gain of 1 cent per share, compared with net loss of $4.1 million, or a loss of 3 cents per share in 2019. Net loss for the full year totaled $9.9 million, or a loss of 7 cents per share, compared with net loss of $7.3 million, or a loss of 8 cents a share in 2019. There are significant non-cash and or non-recurring items included in net income, and the company's KPI performance is adjusted EBITDA, which has grown from $1.2 million in 2019 to $8.1 million in 2020. This growth really proves out that we are realizing the synergies and capitalizing on the opportunities created by bringing the businesses and capabilities of our cloud service delivery group together, and reflects additional first-person IP software licensing revenues from LedgerPay in parallel. We closed out the year with $2.2 million in EBITDA in the fourth quarter, against $0.3 million in the fourth quarter of 2019. As of December 31, 2020, we had $11 million in cash, an increase from $8.7 million as at December 31, 2019, where we had received but not yet paid for the Menlo acquisition. Exiting the fourth quarter, as Mike mentioned earlier, we spent some time completing the due diligence on the Mazik and BankCard acquisitions. The first financing related to these transactions was on March 22nd of this year, where we announced the closing of a $20 million Canadian dollar strategic investment by Fax Capital. Next, earlier this month, on April 8th, we announced the closing of $62.6 million sub-receipts financed financing conducted by a syndicate of underwriters, which was the largest amount of funds in our company history that we've raised, and an increase in our debt facility by $50 million U.S. dollars. These investments fortified our cash reserves and give us the ability to execute the acquisition of Mesa Global, which has been closed, and finance the closing of the transformational BankCard acquisition. Post these acquisitions, we have the flexibility to expedite our growth initiatives, accelerate our LedgerPay payment solutions products, and broaden our first-person IP and operational capabilities. With that overview completed, I'll turn it back over to Mike for a deeper dive into some of the operational highlights for the quarter. Mike?
Great. Thanks, Michael. I'll first talk about the recent progress on our revolutionary fintech solution, LedgerPay. We commenced the new year by announcing an LOI with a major merchant acquiring bank as a sponsor for direct payment processing for Visa, MasterCard, and other major credit and debit card brands. As I referred to on the previous earnings call, this is an important prerequisite to enable the full payment processing capabilities of LedgerPay. After conducting a thorough due diligence process with a number of premier banks in the U.S. and Canada, we found the partner we were looking for. Though we did not recognize we do recognize that there was a slight delay in fully executing the bank sponsorship agreement, I am pleased to share that we are extremely close and are in final review of legal agreements and expect this to be completed very soon. The reason for this holdup was due to the fact that we had to navigate the BankCard acquisition while also orchestrating to factor in the terms of the existing BankCard bank agreements with their three banks and our bank syndicate for credit, all in the context with the broader picture of our bank sponsorship. All that to say, we see the light at the end of the tunnel for the imminent completion of the bank sponsorship. As you are aware, historically, we have not done segment reporting for our business because of the size and early stage nature of LedgerPay. I wanted to share that we plan to introduce segment reporting when we report Q2 2021 earnings. The first business segment will be our global cloud solutions business, and the second segment will be our global payment solutions business. This new segment for payment solutions will include both the LedgerPay business as well as BankCard and other future payment solution acquisition companies. As LedgerPay approaches general availability and we integrate the BankCard business into our company, breaking down this segment as its own line item apart from the cloud solutions will help us more easily track the growth of each respective business as they are inherently different. Nevertheless, we still plan to operate both verticals under the one Quisitive foundation, which I will elaborate on later. With that said, I want to remind everyone about the current LedgerPay revenue recognition in our historic financials. As you recall, in March of last year, we secured our first licensing agreement for LedgerPay with Rev19, a Merchant Services Independent Sales Organization, or ISO. As an ISO, Rev19 licensed LedgerPay's payment processing platform to offer payment services to its merchant base. Though we've been recognizing this perpetual license contract revenue for the past four quarters, it will soon be phasing out effective next quarter as we transition into the next chapter of the LedgerPay story. We will continue to have the maintenance and support revenue associated with this contract in future quarters. Nonetheless, we have so far garnered encouraging results at the genesis of this new chapter. Earlier this year, we kickstarted our LedgerPay risk management program by engaging Adrian Martinez as an advisor to our company. Adrian brings a wealth of knowledge and experience in risk management and has done an excellent job finalizing our very own risk management program in conjunction to acting as a liaison to the recently announced bank sponsor. The reason that a risk management program is so crucial is because we will be working in close partnership with our bank sponsor to underwrite merchants and to establish process and governance in support of our technology to comply with these policies. We also retain payments leader and former Planet Payments CEO and Chairman of Board Carl Williams, as well as former Global Payments U.S. President Ed Myers to assist with the execution of our payment solutions M&A strategy and operations planning. In an industry that is a dynamic and experiencing rapid growth, seasoned and well-respected advisors such as Carl and Ed bring extraordinary value to the table. Both Carl and Ed played pivotal roles in our acquisition of BankCard and will continue to provide M&A broker services to identify and evaluate future acquisitions, as well as continue to provide advisory services for integration post-acquisition. Speaking of BankCard, I would encourage those who weren't on our corporate update call on March 29th to listen to the recording on our investor relations page of our website for a deeper dive into the acquisition. For the sake of time and the purposes of this call, I'll only be reiterating some of the broad strokes and the key takeaways from our planned BankCard acquisition. BankCard is an established all-in-one merchant payment services provider with over $3 billion of payment volume, which increased 31% in 2020. They have a seasoned payments industry management team at the helm, a strong in-house sales team, deep risk management, and an attractive monthly recurring transaction new revenue model. Additional key features that BankCard offers is their ability to execute payment processing for both card present and card not present, offer a stellar white glove approach with a robust customer service team, an internal multi-channel sales team, and significant domain expertise with over 7,000 merchant accounts or customers. All in all, this transformative acquisition is a key component of our comprehensive strategy moving forward and brings forth immense value to our company. We are working through the final closing items for the acquisition and do not see any barriers to those being completed. We expect that closing could occur as early as next week. To further bolster our go-to-market strategy, we announced that we had achieved Microsoft IP Azure Co-Sell Ready status for LedgerPay, which officially activates Microsoft's sales team in assisting with commercializing our product. Achieving this Co-Sell Ready status reflects our elite relationship with Microsoft and significantly augments our sales efforts, as we are able to leverage their sales team to access customers. With our in-house sales team and the Microsoft sales team working in tandem, we have established a joint go-to-market initiative that is in place and being activated. Next, we issued a press release just yesterday announcing the receipt of two important LedgerPay certifications. The first was for our advanced information security policy, which ensures the safe and proper handling of sensitive data such as that collected by a payment processor and payment analytics company. The second was for our business continuity policy, which ensures that LedgerPay can maintain continuous operations support of merchant and consumers should natural disasters or other events impact critical infrastructure. These certifications validate the legitimacy, security, and safety of our solutions for merchants and customers. As you can see, we are witnessing progress within the chapter of our global payment solutions journey and are certainly encouraged by the milestone accomplishments we are achieving every step of the way. We expect to continue riding this momentum as we head into H2, where we expect to officially commence the commercialization of our groundbreaking solution. Moving on, I'd like to talk about our cloud solutions business and the acceleration of digital transformation we are witnessing. At the beginning of this month, we announced the closing of our acquisition of Mazik Global, an independent software vendor that provides industry-specific healthcare solutions and helps companies deploy Microsoft Dynamics CRM and ERP solutions. As an original co-developer of the Microsoft Dynamics platform, Common Data Model, and other collaborative healthcare initiatives, Microsoft has partnered with Microsoft Engineering for nearly two decades and creates flexible, extensible, AI-driven solutions to help organizations reduce cost, enhance collaboration, increase efficiency, and bolster customer relationships. In particular, Mazik's health cloud platform, Mazik Care, has been the most pertinent in recent times, as it offers a set of robust healthcare-ready business solutions that enhance end-to-end business operations for medical teams and patients. Built on the Microsoft Dynamics platform, Mazik Care enables seamless patient care through a unified data platform and a connected front-end and back-end process to help its healthcare customers more effectively and efficiently operate by leveraging the cloud. Even more relevant is the development of their vaccine flow solution to deliver critical vaccinations across the world, including COVID-19. Recently, Mazik was selected by an array of healthcare facilities and educational institutions in the U.S. to implement the vaccine flow application, as it met all the CDC requirements, was deployable within weeks, and required minimal training for users. To date, Vaccine Flow has helped administer over 1.8 million vaccinations across the country. Not only does this acquisition reinforce our value proposition from a product standpoint, but it is also accretive in deepening our market share within the booming healthcare industry and broadening our U.S. footprint. Furthermore, beyond the amazing offerings and works MASIC is accomplishing, something very compelling that I wanted to share is how pleased Microsoft has been with this acquisition. We've received direct feedback on the potential synergies of Quisitive with MASIC, which are already resulting in leads for newer deals. As one senior Microsoft executive stated, this is a fantastic acquisition for Quisitive. MASIC is considered partner zero in healthcare for Microsoft. Overall, we are extremely excited for what's in store next, now that we have MASIC's incredible capabilities under our belt. Next, in addition to key customer wins from the year-end period that we mentioned on the last call with Essilor Group, Grant Thornton, and Horizontal Digital, we also executed a deal with Stewart Title, a global real estate services company. Quisitive helped accelerate their vision of leveraging the public cloud to better serve the business and customers. With the added capabilities of the Microsoft Azure Cloud, we were able to help Stewart Title reorganize its previous infrastructure and processes into a rapidly developed, advanced set of digitized applications that will set Stewart Title up for success in the near and long term. Also, beginning in Q4 and early this year, we began to see a trend in customers beginning to activate their own M&A strategies. Our team quickly addressed this trend with a tenant migration campaign that showcased a set of services to facilitate the migration of cloud-based assets between entities in acquisitions. These projects have been complex across both change management and technical skills, resulting in large project opportunities. We continue to see strong traction in coupling these services with our CSP licensing and management services supporting strategic M&A for customers in the future. Another key area of focus to drive and develop opportunities is through our sales efforts that lead with software product development, leveraging the Microsoft Cloud. We are seeing significant momentum in healthcare and life sciences in this space that fuels and activates many additional workloads like use of data and analytics in the cloud. We are seeing trends in software development to fuel cloud integration into existing lines of business. Most recently, monetizing this with a diagnostic testing company that we are helping to rapidly develop their product for take-home diagnostics. This trend, coupled with the MASIC acquisition, will continue to show strong industry growth in healthcare. Lastly, we are starting to see a rebound in industries that we have historically had strong relationships with, specifically in retail and hospitality. We see significant future potential, especially when combining our cloud solutions and payment solutions capabilities in the retail industry. Though we had a solid Q4, we reluctantly ran into a few headwinds that affected our operations at the start of the new year. More specifically, as I'm sure some of you might have heard in the news, we had a series of unprecedented storms and shutdowns here in Texas, the location of our U.S. headquarters. This natural disaster was one that no one was prepared for, and it certainly made an impact to our operations. Not only were key contracts and deals delayed, but there were a number of weeks where our employees did not have power to work. Nevertheless, I'm very encouraged to share that this is all behind us now, and we have again hit the ground running as we entered into the second quarter of this year. As we continue to witness an increase in the acceleration of digital transformation, we remain committed to helping our customers every step of the way through moving, operating, and innovating in the Microsoft Cloud. Shifting gears to our M&A strategy. As reflected by our acquisition of MASIC and BankCard, we look for synergistic businesses that further augment our cloud solutions and payment technology offerings. Our team has a very particular and meticulous approach when it comes to M&A. We performed comprehensive due diligence with both MASIC and BankCard before finalizing a deal with them more than 5 months thereafter. We remain focused on growing the business organically while also acquiring cloud technology services company to continue to expand our capabilities. We have active conversations with several additional cloud solutions companies and expect to do at least one additional acquisition in the second half of this year. In the payment solution space, we will continue to acquire merchant portfolios through additional ISO companies going forward. As mentioned previously, we have the M&A advisors who have engaged to help us build target pipeline, and expect to complete the next acquisition later this year. Our goal is to find high-quality businesses that complement our strategy and create accretive value to our shareholders. We believe we have demonstrated a solid track record thus far and will continue to be on the lookout for accretive, value-adding companies considering our strategic inorganic growth goals. Even with the now four acquisitions we have made, all the acquired companies fall under the One Quisitive umbrella. We not only do this from a branding standpoint, but because each company we acquire truly has a key role within our cloud services or payment solution strategy. Moreover, as I've previously mentioned in the last earnings call, we kickstarted an initiative to align all of our back office capabilities and internal systems so that we are all speaking the same language and are all on the same page on the back end. We are taking the time to invest in a comprehensive platform, especially with the recent acquisition and the imminent launch of LedgerPay. With so many moving parts, we recognize that an efficient organization is imperative. These investments will establish a strong foundation for our company and enable successful execution and future acquisitions. Looking ahead, I'd like to share a brief outlook in regard to Q1 and the full year 2021. As I referred to earlier, due to a number of events that were out of our control at the beginning of the year, including the winter storms, as well as the transition of the Rev19 LedgerPay license contract, Q1 of this year will be slightly lower than the Q4 result we just announced, even though our cloud solutions business has still grown organically. However, as you have also just heard on this call, we have a multitude of exciting initiatives in the 2021 pipeline that will be the start of an inflection point for Quisitive. The accretive Mazik and BankCard acquisitions and the continued organic growth of our cloud solutions business, in addition to the official general availability of LedgerPay, will make this a very special year. In particular, the second half of this year is when I believe we'll begin to recognize the fruits of our labor. Looking back at our track record so far, we've achieved every milestone we said we would and are proceeding as planned in launching our fintech solution, LedgerPay. As I look towards the future over the next 3 to 5 years, we envision Quisitive as a $250 million revenue business with $100 million in EBITDA. We certainly have a way to go in achieving this longer-term vision, but with the current team we have and the initiatives in place, it is more than doable. That concludes my prepared remarks. Thank you for your time this afternoon. We look forward to updating you on our progress going forward, and we're now ready to open the call for your questions. Shauna?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Our first question comes from Kevin Krishnaratne from Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey there. Good afternoon, Mike and Michael. Question for you on the quarter, a good quarter. You mentioned the 18% organic revenue growth. I'm wondering if you could maybe unpack that a couple of ways. There's multiple elements to that cloud segment. Different revenue streams. I'm thinking in particular the cloud, the CSP stream, it was new this quarter relative to last quarter. So I'm wondering if you can talk about what you saw there. Consumption was high given, seasonality in Q4 or not. And then if you can maybe talk about the revenue with regards to new versus existing customers in that revenue stream.
Yeah, so in terms of percentage growth, it was pretty evenly spread. I mean, there's certainly growth in our professional services business, which we'll continue to have. That'll go proportionately. But we did see significant growth. The cloud services, cloud solutions licensing side is more than doubled from the beginning of the year to end of the year last year. And we see that trend continuing. We have some sizable opportunities that will drive that even further. So the good news about that is it's a heavily recurring 3+ year recurring revenue stream. So we're seeing not only a growth in that, but increasing that recurring revenue component of it. So So as we look forward on that, we'll continue to see that be a trend where that will fuel growth. But there's a high correlation between people moving to the cloud and the professional services that complement that. So we'll continue to see growth there as well. So as we look at that going forward, we anticipate that mix continuing in a similar pattern to what we saw in 2020.
Okay, great. And then with regards to new versus existing customers?
To be honest, I don't have that off the top of my head, Daniel, Michael, if you have that available to you.
Well, in terms of our the customer churn, our anchor customers that are large, they haven't changed over the course of the fourth quarter. Obviously, there's lots of volume churn where you've got, you know, small projects, you know, small assessment discovery type projects that, you know, maybe we finish them and they're not at a point where they've got the budget to go back for more on an expanded sort of footprint. But that's, you know, in terms of the overall revenue mix, there's not a lot of churn among the large clients.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think the other element, Kevin, there is just really around as you look at it, you know, we saw some expansion in existing accounts, but you think about new accounts like Stewart Title was not a customer at the beginning of the year. We talked about that. So we're seeing a kind of a good blend of organic growth as well within existing accounts, but more importantly, continuing to acquire very strategic accounts along the way.
No, it's great to hear. I know you referenced the multiple new customers. I was just curious about what you're seeing in the existing base, and it looks like there is continued to be expansion opportunities there. So good to see there. And then thanks for the color on the Q1 going down. I think a lot of us understood LedgerPay, you know, coming off, and then you mentioned some of the other elements like the cloud reselling element. But I guess is the main delta that with regards to sort of the slowdown that you might have seen in the initial parts of January, that's just regards to, you know, consultants not working, just not having the capabilities. And so there might have been a little bit of a slowdown on that side of the business. Since that lull, are you completely right back up to fully operating levels? Because I recall on your Q3 call, you'd been seeing a lot of momentum. You'd been doing a lot of hiring of consultants up until sort of that seasonal pause in December. So I'm just curious, are you fully right back up to normal now?
Yeah, so really it resulted from the winter storm hitting. So the cloud services business, both the licensing as well as professional services, actually grew from Q4. It just didn't grow as much as it could have had the professional services component people been able to actually, turn on a computer and connect. Because if you probably realize the professional services side of our business requires power, as it turns out, and internet and all that good stuff. So, that we lost that or deferred it. We'll get the revenue back. The good news is all of that work we'll still get. It just gets deferred to future periods on the services side. So as we continue to build forward, we'll benefit from that. But there was a bit of a hit there. It really had no factor on available work and other kinds of things. It just had on the ability for professional services work to actually be performed during that time.
Okay, got it. Thanks for the color. Appreciate it. Switching gears over to LedgerPay, just want to kind of ask a question. So I guess, are you suggesting that if BankCard had never happened, that there would have been a very good chance for, you know, you would have had the bank sponsorship in Q1?
Yeah, likely would have been able to get it done sooner. Again, I won't get into all the details, but there's a lot of, if you can imagine, you get a bunch of banks working together and want to collateralize, especially when you're doing credit agreements and all those things. There's certain things that you have to protect against as a payment processor. There are reserve accounts that you have with each of these bank sponsors and things like that. So all of that became quite a chess game for me as we worked across the various moving parts of three banks that BankCard had, our banking relationship, our lenders and the lender syndicate, and making sure that nobody's agreements contradicted with the other. So that was a big part of the process that we had to go through. And I'm actually glad that we hadn't already done the bank, because I probably had to go redo it had I got it done beforehand.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so as much as you can't, you know, you're not up and officially running, you can't go out and, you know, book revenues with retailers. I think in the past you've talked about, you know, potential for proof of concepts. Can you give us an update there? You know, any metrics you can share? Have you gone and actually implemented this at retailers? What are they saying? Anything you can shed there would be very helpful.
Yeah, so we were focused on these certification processes because those were critical steps to be done first before you start capturing data from customers and all those things. I want to know that you have those done, so we completed those. But we actually are in active conversations with some major merchants, actually jointly with Microsoft, on doing pilots for the payments intelligence piece, where we would gather data and bring it into the models and do those things. So we actually have some meaningful discussions going with some major merchants on that very front to do pilots in advance of the certification with Visa.
And did those pilots that you've co-signed with Microsoft, that came as a result of you achieving the co-sell status?
Not necessarily. Actually, in both of these cases, we were already talking to the customer and we brought Microsoft into the conversation. So they didn't lead us in. We just are leveraging our relationship. And these are conversations we're having with these folks who are we've had the conversations for now 9+ months talking to them about what we're trying to do. And now at that stage where we're ready to start to do pilot activities.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you for taking my questions. I'll pass the line. Thanks.
Thanks, Kevin.
Our next question comes from Rob Goff from Echelon. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my question. My question would be, given the loud signals to the marketplace following on the bank card and the Mazik deals, have you had any feedback from the industry in terms of impacting what your potential acquisition pipeline might include?
So it's opened a whole bunch of doors, I'll be honest, because in the payment side, when we were talking to people before, they were like, yeah, interesting, but, you know, can you finance it? Can you do those things? And, you know, the M&A advisors, Ed and Carl, was interesting. Within days after announcing it, they started getting bombarded with people calling them saying, hey, we're very interested in learning more about what the Quisitive team is doing and what it looks like. So we've had some really positive, coverage on the acquisition side on payments. We actually have seen some other things. We got some interesting conversations where there's a few unique providers that might kind of fit in a little bit into both buckets, where they're cloud solutions providers that have some IP that exist in payment space. So have some interesting discussions going on like that as well.
Very good. And in terms of the cadence of your acquisitions, is it a bit of a you know, pause and integrate, then move forward, or are you multitasking?
Well, I'm always multitasking. You know me, Rob. So I've got, you know, I'm doing a bunch of different things, but we're going to be mindful of it. Again, we're a value creation company, not a consolidator that just brings stuff into a bucket. This is all about creating accretive incremental value together that we believe creates much higher margins, much higher valuations in the industry. And to do that, you got to integrate. And we want to do that mindfully. And we're building a platform to do that and doing those things. So we will be very smart about it to make sure that we get the right foundations in place. I'm just a big believer in that. We'll take our time to do that. So we're not going to be, you know, looking to do one a month kind of thing. That just isn't going to be our model ever. We're always going to do very high value targets. We'll be able to do them frequently, but it's not going to be a volume play. It's going to be a value play that we think creates significant value to our shareholders.
Congratulations and thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Robert Young from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Maybe the first place I'll start is just around the Q1. I think you said that you'd expect it to be down quarter over quarter, which I think is kind of what people might expect out of seasonality. And so maybe a little more color around how to model Q1. Is there any, I think you said earlier also that you expected growth maybe on a year over year basis. So would the brackets be maybe year over year growth, but still a decline quarter over quarter?
Yeah. I mean, we're still expecting significant year-over-year growth. The quarter-on-quarter growth is, and in fact, I've got to remember back, we'll actually even have year-on-year growth if I look back. I can't remember exactly what the quarter was, to be honest, but it'll be similar. But the big issue is mostly related to the revenue recognition of LedgerPay that you and I have talked about and the other analysts as well. You know, going the burn of a quarter of what it was in a quarter, that will be significantly less in Q1. So the cloud solutions business will continue to be, like I said, actually will deliver growth quarter on quarter. It's just the beginning back, if you look back on Q1 and year over year, and then sequential Q4 on Q1 is what I'm really talking about, is the Q4 results to Q1. Will be down, will still be up significantly on a year-on-year basis.
Okay. And then maybe it'd be good to just go over the milestones for LedgerPay as you see them over the next maybe 6 months. I think there's some certifications, maybe even beyond what you announced just, I guess, today or yesterday. And then you've got to connect to networks. You've got to, you know, finalize the sponsor bank. You've got to build, I think, some physical data center to connect to the networks as well. Like maybe we could just sort of lay out maybe a bit of a roadmap for how you think that might go over the next year or whatever the time frame might be. That'd be helpful.
Yeah, mostly months, but I'll talk about beyond that. But yeah, so the data center is deployed, the cloud environment, the software is deployed. So all of that's been done. These certifications that are being executed are done in the context of processes and or system configuration. So one of the next things up will be a PCI audit of the environment. That's the software and underlying environment that we'll do. So that'll be getting done here in May sometime. And so that's one of the next milestones. We've also got, obviously, the final execution of the bank sponsorship, which is the formality of the pre-agreed terms and things. So that'll be very soon that we'll have that. And that's in days and weeks, not weeks, months, or anything like that. So that'll be done. Then you'll start to see the endpoint with Visa will happen. It'll be about 90 days after we announce the bank card sponsorship is kind of the time frame. And that's just mostly about coordination of schedule with Visa, et cetera. Outside of that, there are a series of things that we're doing just in terms of these pilots I'm talking about and some of those things that'll be there. But, you know, the anticipation is that over the next 90 to 120 days maximum that, we'll be commercialized and looking to start onboarding merchants, including beginning onboarding bank card merchants as we have this certified endpoint. So we're already starting that planning as well over the next couple weeks as we finish out and close the bank card agreement. We've already had some preliminary discussions on this. We'll be starting to migrate those merchants beginning in Q3 of this year and bringing some of those over to our platform.
Okay. And then when you talk about onboarding merchants, you're talking about onboarding as it relates to the cloud processing function as opposed to the retail, data analytics function that might be a longer-term opportunity. Maybe you could just break those two apart?
No, both. It'll be both. It'll be both direct payment processing for ISOs, bank card merchants, as well as ISOs, but then also it will be payments intelligence activities with merchants. So these pilots that we're doing will be direct onto the payments intelligence process. And as we activate those, looking to move them to production on the backside of any pilots that we would do. But yeah, you'll see both of those be landed beginning in the back half of this year.
Okay, great. Maybe one last little question, maybe a little bit of a slightly different flavor to Rob Goff's question. The opportunity here, as you've described it, has been, that this is a unique cloud, an Azure-based payments platform. And so, just beyond the answer to Rob's question, maybe you could talk about, how that's interested or what kind of response you're getting now that is becoming more real. And how unique is that? What are potential retailers looking to get out of an opportunity like a fully cloud-based, Azure-based payments processing platform? And I'll pass the line.
Yeah, it's really all about payments intelligence to the large merchants, and this is where they're super excited about. We are the only one that can provide them the information that we provide under our payments intelligence process around customer identification, being able to offer real-time promotions at the point of sale based on that profile using AI, machine learning, and things, as well as then the traceability of those promotions and who redeemed them, all those things that we talk about under our payments intelligence. We're the only option to do that. And these conversations that we're having with major merchants, these are global providers, is because they see the differentiated data and value and insights that we're going to provide to them that they cannot get anywhere else. So from that perspective, as we bring that to life, start to demonstrate that, we've got some demonstrable versions of the product we're starting to put together that by industries and things like that. But yeah, we're getting great reception. And we have, like I said, major globals working with us that are very intrigued by the offering and exploring pilots.
And even before getting to the data analytics component, like how unique is, you know, the platform as, you know, a cloud, you know, an Azure-based payments platform? Like how many competitors are there that would be fully cloud-based?
Zero. There's nobody doing that. So it's very unique. But for large merchants, the payment, the value, when we go to large merchants, it's all about payments intelligence and the data. That's the gold. They don't have it. They can't get it anywhere else. And we're unlocking incredible value to them. When you start talking about ISOs and mid-market merchants and other things, there's some really, especially in the ISO landscape, the payment processing platform, the payments intelligence will be interesting, but there's high value in the payments processing platform because we have some really unique capabilities that aren't available around our portal that we provide to both the ISO and their merchant community. Around there's some unique offerings we have around chargeback management and residual payments management, which are critical business operations items to these ISOs that have these sales organizations to sell services. We have a really unique set of offerings there as well. We have a great pipeline. One of our sellers is focused exclusively on that ISO channel, and we have a really, really strong pipeline of ISOs who have seen what we're bringing to the market and are anxiously awaiting and ready to step up and say yes as soon as the endpoint is available.
Okay. Thanks for all the questions, Michael.
Yep.
Our next question comes from Stephen Bowen from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Just one follow-up there, Mike. In terms of connecting to Visa, did you say that that's a minimum of 90 days once you get your bank sponsorship?
Correct. It typically takes, it doesn't have to be a minimum, but that's typically what it is 90 days. And it's there's some technical work, but it's mostly, you can imagine Visa has a lot of things going on. You have to get on their schedule and do all that stuff. So that's the process. It's our team has done it many, many times. Our head of engineering and some of the other folks have done those endpoints in their former life at First Data and other places where they're very familiar with what we need to do. But the kind of the general guidance is, you know, 60 to 90 days, but kind of on norm about 90 days.
Okay. So everybody's basically waiting for the bank sponsor and then it hits a switch and all the next milestones sort of start falling in place. Is that a good way to look at it?
Yeah, we've already got some of the activities going on with Visa, some of the prep work. We've done all the paperwork. All those kinds of things are already in motion. So a lot of that is in flight as we speak, even in advance of the formal final agreements. We've already, you know, the bank that we're doing the agreements with has already done joint phone calls with us with Visa, introduced it, telling them that they are going to be sponsoring us. So it's, you know, informally happening, but that formal process with the letter that goes over is the final leg here.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Mike.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Suthan Sukumar from 8 Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gents. First question for me is on the cloud solution side. I just want to kind of touch on the organic growth trend that you guys are seeing. What would you say is different about the type and profile of some of the new clients and the scope of new engagements that you've been working on recently?
Yeah, you know, it's increasingly, you know, a lot of people focus on migration to the cloud where they're thinking about people moving data center servers to the cloud. To me, that's a commodity service. We do some of it, but that's not a value add service. Really what we're seeing, and this is the next wave of really what the cloud journey looks like. It's all about how are you innovating using all these powerful new technologies in the cloud, whether it's leveraging IoT at the edge or taking and consuming rich data services, AI, machine learning, or other kinds of things, or just doing and leveraging the capabilities of a modern cloud and re-engineering things and being able to do it in a much more rapid manner. So it's really about engineering those kinds of solutions. So like in the case of Stuart and others, Essilor is a great example where they were trying to reopen their facilities in ways, but their systems had to be completely adapted to do that. We could use this really powerful capability in the cloud, re-engineer, re-architect their applications to enable them to deploy new solutions into allowing them to open up under new restrictions imposed by pandemic and other things that would have been nearly impossible to do without leveraging the cloud and some of the gains that you can get there. So it's all about creating these rich, modern cloud applications that solve business problems for their customers. That's really where the focus is. And then combining that with then being the licensing arm for that customer to host and deliver those services through the Microsoft cloud and getting the licensing revenue stream as a complement to that. So it's kind of those two in tandem that create the growth for us.
Got it. Thank you. And on the M&A front for the cloud solutions segment, I mean, you touched on expectations to remain active this year with at least one acquisition in the back half. Given the Mazik acquisition, what are some of the, I guess, focus and priorities that you're looking at now, that you're thinking about now with respect to new transactions in this segment?
Yeah, we'll continue to see it. You'll see us continue to do two things. One is look at industry focus and continue to deepen our industry expertise. That is the new model. If you're in this space doing technology services, I don't care who you are, if you aren't getting deeper and deeper in your acumen around industry, it's going to be more and more difficult to get to the high value services. You can do the commodity services like I talked about. You can provide them some server managed services and you can do some migrations into the cloud, but that has a shelf life. That's a low value opportunity long term for a business. You have to really be doing these more high value modern applications and dealing with some of the complexity of that. And to do that, you have to understand it in the context of industry and business, not just horizontal kinds of capabilities. So that you're going to see that be a focal point for us. Certainly, you know, healthcare has been and is now even more of an emphasis for us. Retail, we see great opportunities in, obviously, both from the cloud services side, but then combining that with what we're doing on a LedgerPay side is a really unique value proposition for us already with IP, and we want to continue to deepen that. And then obviously manufacturing, Mazik brought some unique capabilities there as well, and that's something that Quisitive has. So you'll see us doing those kinds of things, looking for deeper industry expertise, and then where possible, ISV capabilities or IP similar to what Mazik brings to the table, where there's this recurring revenue stream that is complementing this industry and systems integration or services capabilities as a component of it.
Got it. Great. And one last one for me on LedgerPay. I mean, it's pretty encouraging that you're seeing some good early engagement with on the payments intelligence side with those merchants. The larger retail merchants you mentioned. With respect to those, are those? I mean, for those to kind of move forward to a full blown pilot, are those dependent on LedgerPay, the payments processing capability being enabled, or are you able to kind of move forward on the payments intelligence side without having that kind of be in the picture?
Yeah, no, we've decoupled those. So clearly for large merchants, we expect in most cases we will enter with our payments intelligence capabilities independent of being the payment processor. Several reasons, but one of the biggest one is they're likely going to have contracts that have termination timeframes that are allowed and not. So you'll see on the payments intelligence side with larger merchants, we will decouple from the payment processing. We will be part of the payment flow, but we do not have to take over the full payment processing. And we'll front end, you know, people like First Data and TSYS and others who might be the payment processor today, providing our payments intelligence capabilities.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for taking my questions, guys.
Our next question comes from Gabriel Leung from Beacon Securities. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. Just two quick follow-ups, Mike, for you, as it relates to BankCard. I know the deal hasn't closed yet, but just curious if you'd be able to share with us some of their stats for calendar Q1 in terms of either year-over-year or quarter-over-quarter growth, what you're seeing there with BankCard, number one. And number two is, with the deal closing shortly and LedgerPay going commercial shortly as well, I'm curious if there's any sort of update in terms of, you know, what sort of economics you would expect to see as you transition some of BankCard's existing merchants over to the LedgerPay payment processing, whether there's been any change in terms of the views of what that could impact your revenues and margins. That's for me. Thanks.
Yeah, so, you know, in terms of their volumes, what I'll tell you is their Q1 was their best quarter ever. And volumes are up significantly for them. There's some interesting trends there that they're seeing, and I don't have all the metrics yet because they're still closing out their first quarter, as you can imagine. But just some early indicators are total volumes are up. One of the things they are seeing in the U.S., I know things are a little different in Canada in terms of the pandemic, but restaurants and other retailers that had scaled back last year are now reopening, and they're starting to see some volumes come back from that channel that wasn't really a part of 2020 at all, really beyond early Q1 of last year. So they're getting some of that growth, but just in general, adding new merchants, they're still acquiring new merchants and seeing volume growth from existing merchants. So positive momentum there. In terms of the synergies, it's really only been a couple of weeks, I guess, since I did the call. So no big changes there. We'll continue to evolve that, but we still, you know, anticipate being able to bring those things together beginning here in Q3 and start to unlock those synergies, both operationally and where we're doing, but also where and how we can be a complement to what they're doing to help them expand their business and bring those together. But no real changes from the kinds of things that we discussed last in our call and other one-on-one sessions.
Gotcha. Appreciate the feedback.
Our next question comes from Rob Goff from Echelon. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my follow-up. I just wanted to, in turn, follow up on your comment with respect to your vision of being a $250 million revenue company and $100 million EBITDA company. That as a 3 to 5 year vision, can you talk to that in terms of organic versus inorganic and perhaps on the mix to support that type of margin profile? Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, we've put together some things. I think it was in one of our decks that we had on the website that kind of talked about this. But, you know, we continue to see growth in both parts of our business, both organic, and we've talked about the organic growth component in cloud solutions, that 15 to 20%, which we met last year, and we'll strive to continue to deliver on those kinds of numbers going forward. But if you look beyond that, in terms of mix, we do anticipate that both activation of LedgerPay as well as the M&A growth and organic growth on the cloud solutions side, that in that, if you fast forward to say, let's say 3 years from now or $250 million, that we think that 60% or more of that business will be a payments based platform where we're continuing to unlock the value there capturing it from both organic and with a high percentage of that coming from organic. We think that that 60%, that anywhere from a minimum of 30% or more of that revenue will just be organic from LedgerPay on top of the organic growth that we get throughout any acquisitions we do along the way and continuing to create that. But kind of the vision is to become, you know, a 60%+ payments business as we grow, but still continue to grow the cloud solutions business both organically and through acquisitions as well.
Great. Thank you.
You know, that if you do the math on that, that's a 25% EBITDA model. That's, we think, very achievable. We're at or near that today, obviously, when you do a pro forma on Quisitive plus bank card and MASIC and all those things together.
Yep. Very good. Thank you.
At this time, this concludes the company's question and answer session. If your question was not taken, you may contact Quisitive Investor Relations team at quis@gatewayir.com. I'd now like to turn the call back over to Mr. Reinhart for his closing remarks.
Great. Thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your time and energy and interest in our company. Especially want to thank our employees, our partners, certainly all of you investors who have bet on us, as well as our strategic customers who continue to look at Quisitive for their support. We appreciate your continued interest in Quisitive. We'll look forward to continuing to give you an update as we move forward, and appreciate your time today. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today for Quisitive's fourth quarter and full year 2020 earnings conference call. You may now disconnect.